This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. The place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
The sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikilikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Josh Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTB studios. Along with me, as always, my PIC for the 473rd time in our lives for these podcasts, Scott Criscola. How are you?
Good evening, JR. 473, yes indeed, of the longest-running, continuous, episodic gold standard. Yes, JR. And tonight, it's weird. It's been like a decent length 6 weeks, and we've done like so many different things. But This is the first time we're back in the house since, what, late October?
Since before I lost my power for a week.
Yes.
The last time we did an MSG house show. We've had Saturday Night Smith events. We did the build to Mania 3. We did WrestleMania 3. We've done whatever else has popped up, the Halloween special. So we've had a lot of stuff. But yes, back in the garden. But joining us here, as always, we have a guest on the MSG house show specials.
Sir.
And that is the one and only Mr. John D'Amato himself. How are you, sir?
Oh, great, guys. Ho, ho, ho. Happy Hanukkah and all that. Happy late birthday there, Mr. Justin. You're catching up to us.
I'll never catch you.
Right behind us, yes.
I remember when I met Scott, he was like 33, and it seemed like it was so old. And now I'm way over that, but so is he.
I wish I was still there. Anyway.
Pitch from batting practice. 2 weeks ago,
yes, yeah. That's right.
But it's nice to be in the second office. My home office is Nassau Coliseum. I don't think we'll be doing any shows from there, but it's nice to be on the first MSG show. Thanks, guys.
That's right. Oh, of course. Yeah, you're sitting at Kelly's desk. Put the, 1987. What do you have, a John Van Beesbrook bobblehead to put next to Kelly's Lanny McDonald?
Right.
As JR and Mr. D'Amato mentioned, we are back, JR, in our offices for the first time in a while. We had some... pay-per-views and some other interesting things. But here we are. And tonight we are going to head back to the home office. And it is – doing a little technical work here. Here we go. All right. The date –
we're on trouble, gentlemen. If you're doing technical work.
I know. Yeah, it wouldn't be a Place to Be podcast without something being too hot or too cold. May 18th, 1988. First time we've been at the garden since February, and we are post WrestleMania 3, so now it's time for us to kind of restructure and see what kind of things we see, what kind of feuds, what's been going on with our other guys. Is Andre still around? Are we going to get some rematches? Let's see what the scoop is here. But first, we will go back to that evening, which was a Monday, and once again, guys, Vince split the roster into threes. So, of course, we have the group here at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Let us go slightly west to the Palmer Auditorium in Davenport, Iowa.
Let's go west. The Kings of Wishbone.
Go west, young man. That's right. Go west, young man. Hometown of current WWE superstar Seth Rollins, Davenport, Iowa. Here is your card. Jimmy Jack Funk fought Tom McGee to a draw.
I'm going to find that on DVD.
What's so special about this Tom fucking McGee guy that he gets to get draws? Outback Jack defeated Frenchie Martin. Thank God that wasn't a draw, and JR doesn't have to do that match. Your women's tag team champions. We have women's tag belts? Leilani Kai and Judy Martin defeated Candice Pardue and Velvet McIntyre.
Candice LaRue.
So we do have women's tag team championship belts. Wonder what tournament in South America they won those at.
The Sugar Tits tournament.
That's right. Iron Mike Sharp defeated CeeDee Aafi. Nikolai Volkov defeated Corporal Kirshner, and in the main event, Hercules defeated Billy Jack Haynes in a chain match, which we've seen a lot of.
A lot.
A lot. And we won't see – I know, and we'll see much more of this pair. Believe me, we will. And let's go even further west. The rest of the roster was at the Tacoma Dome in Tacoma, Washington. Kind of a rare area, right, John, for WWF, even in the late 80s. They didn't go to the Pacific Northwest a lot, but – here's the card. The Karate Kid and Pepe Gomez defeated Lord Littlebrook and Little Tokyo.
If all four of those guys are on Will's list for the GWWE project.
Of course they are. Of course they are. Jerry Allen defeated Steve Lombardi. Killer Khan defeated SD Jones. Killer Khan. We talked about Killer Khan?
I don't think so.
All right, we'll get to him when he comes to the garden. He's an old WWF strong. I mean, Kelly knows a lot about him because Titans of Wrestling, they talked about him because he was around a lot in the early 80s. Let's see. The K-Name Connection defeated Kamala and Sika. Should we talk about that now, or you want to wait?
No.
About what the K-Name Connection?
No,
do you want to wait
as we get there?
Okay, so we'll get there. Macho Man Randy Savage defeated Tito Santana. Oh, look at that, bringing back the old awesome feud. And your main event, your World Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, defeated the British Bulldogs in a cage match. Oh, not bad main event. Guys, anybody conspicuous by their absence on either of these shows? Because we will not see him on our show. Any name?
The Rougeaus versus the Dream Team? Because that was scheduled for this show that we're going to talk about, but did not happen.
What was that match again?
The Rougeaus versus the New Dream Team.
That is not what I was going to mention. Okay. A name not mentioned. And
the current
mention-
IC title holder.
Correct. Your Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Steamboat.
Hmm.
Nowhere to be found. Not in Tacoma, not in Davenport, and we'll already tell you now, he is not here at the Garden. Very interesting.
Big
joke. Very interesting.
So I just picked up what you were putting down. Yeah, we could talk about Tom Zenk briefly. but I will say next week we're going to talk about him more because we see the Can-Am Connection next week. And right, is it next week or this week we have them on? I think it's next week.
It's next week.
Okay, yeah. So next week we have the Can-Am Connection on, and Kelly Nelson is joining us. A resident historian, so he's going to talk a little bit about Zenk's bio and history. But yeah, it was announced yesterday, I believe, that Tom Zenk had passed away earlier this month. So a lot of talk about him on Twitter and the internet and whatnot. And again, John, if you have any thoughts, you could talk about it. Scott, we can talk about it next week with Kelly. But anything you want to talk about Zenk, John?
No, not much. Just that I thought he had missed out on a golden opportunity. With whatever was going on, or either he left or I thought the Can-Am could have been a hot team for like years to come. He could have had a very long career, and then just for whatever reason, it was talent wasted there.
And if you looked at the two as well, Zenk clearly more of like a Vince guy when you look at the two of them. So he probably would have gotten a pretty solid push at some point solo, I would think.
Oh yeah, I mean, and definitely the ladies went crazy for him. I mean, they're definitely a good looking guy, and he could have had a long career. But whatever else was going on, it's just not for everybody. So.
And if you remember too, he was one of the first big like internet. I don't say shoot guys or whatever, but I think he was on Live Audio Wrestling and IATA and all that stuff. I mean, he was one of the first guys that really broke out like shit talking and all that stuff. And then he just vanished. Rumor has it, like, was it Vince or whatever, sent him like a cease and desist. That was part of the rumor that was out there, but he just went MIA eventually after being one of the most vocal kind of first guys on the internet, first ex-wrestler on the internet out there, just kind of talking about his time in the business and shooting and shitting on everyone.
Right. Yep, and he passed away at the age of 59, so obviously not old at all. And really, I haven't really heard why. It seems like a very mysterious circumstances.
They said it was like earlier this month or whatever. Like, it wasn't even like it just happened the other day.
I know, it was 9 days from when we're recording. Today's the 18th, and he died on the 9th, I think, or 8th or something. So it took 10 days for us to figure out that he... Is that when he got found? I mean, it's so weird. So anyway, we'll get more into Tom Zenk later on. But yes, passed away at the age of 59 earlier this month. All right, so we are at the Garden. Your announcers, we have a 3-man team early, right. And then it goes to a regular team. We do have Gorilla Monsoon. We have Lord Alfred Hayes returns, and we have Bobby the Brain Heenan. Bobby will be here early on, and then he's busy tonight with some guys, so he'll leave, and it'll be just Gorilla and Alfred. We haven't had Alfred. I guess we've had Alfred recently, no? Or it's mostly been him and Bobby, I guess, the last few...
yeah.
I guess it's been him and Bobby the last few shows. We haven't had Alfred in a while, so... any other notes, JR, before we move on?
No, that's it.
All right, there we go. Let's hop into the ring for our opening match, and it's a humdinger. We do have a debut, though. So.
We do. Also, Gorilla was taking shots at Bobby's neck brace, which he's wearing. Yes. I guess we can talk about later. So our opener is the debut of Samuel Houston, taking on Terry Gibbs, our old buddy. Michael Maurice Smith started his wrestling career under the name Sam Houston in 1983, championship wrestling from Florida. 1985, moved on to Jim Crockett Promotions, where he worked for Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA in their feud with the Four Horsemen. Early 86, won the NWA Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title from Crusher Khrushchev, before losing it to Black Bart a few months later. He had brief runs in the Central States Territory in the Universal Wrestling Federation before moving on to the WWF in the summer of 87. Houston's run, of course, mainly known for being an enhancement talent in wrestling. His father is former wrestler and promoter Grizzly Smith, half-brother Jake the Snake Roberts, younger sister Rockin' Robin, who we'll see eventually as well. Good old Sammy boy has arrived, and thank you to Jeff Jarvis, of course, for that and all the fun facts still to come. Standard opener here is newcomer Samuel Houston has arrived to make his area debut. He takes on old reliable Terry Gibbs. Gorilla puts over Sam's credentials as Al calls Gibbs a warrior. Bobby talks about how hard it is to debut at MSG and how it can throw you off. Houston frustrates Gibbs to start as Gorilla talks about Bobby's recent debate with Ken Patera and his neck injury that resulted from it. Promises that the war is on with Ken, does Bobby, and he says he should be eating off a steel plate. Gorilla... and asks Bobby to provide a scouting report on Houston, and just as he gets a two on a crossbody and goes to the arm, Al criticizes Sam for being a bit lax, while Bobby says he does look like he'd be trained by someone with knowledge. Sam keeps wrenching away at the arm and eventually slips up by whiffing on a hard charge to the corner and careening up and over to the floor. Gibbs blocks Sam from getting back in, chopping him hard to the floor, slamming him back out there as well. Sam climbs back in, but Gibbs maintains control of the punch to the head and a knee drop for two. Sam then comes back as the two trade big blows in the corner. Sam lands a sloppy flying elbow and gets a small package and backslide for near falls. Gibbs catches Sam with his head down and puts boots to the face, but misses a weird-ass elbow drop. Sam then follows with a bulldog for the win. Decent opener, but nothing to get excited about at all. Sam looked okay in spots, but it was pretty sloppy, I thought, overall in this thing, especially at the end. Gibbs is this Gibbs, so I want a half a star of this thing, Scott.
Your opening, your match time, 7:53, and we're going to have some decent length matches tonight, JR, some longer than normal. I also gave it half a star. Crowd didn't really seem to give too much of a crap about Sam Houston, to be honest with you. I think that's a regional thing. They see these guys coming in with, you know, cowboy boots and hats and everything, and unless it's Dusty, I don't think New Yorkers give two shits, but I'll let John comment on that. Otherwise, the match wasn't much. The announcer Gorilla spent most of the time breaking Bobby's balls about the... you know, his guys not having belt. That was a whole big storyline thing, I guess, announcing wise for Gorilla is needling Bobby that he had no belts. So that was always funny. And then of course, I think Gorilla does his usual anatomy thing where he makes up some organ, and then even Alfred can't keep a straight face. He's laughing at it too. So that was pretty funny. So honestly, the announcing kind of distracted you from the match being really boring. I was one of those guys who never thought Sam Houston really fit here in the WWF.
I'd argue fits anywhere due to his slight frame.
Well, yes. Yes. He could fit within the gap of a first down chain.
He could. Yes.
But
only if you fold him in half.
Only if you fold him in half, exactly. It was all right, but I just feel like he obviously went for the paycheck. I almost feel it was the same situation as Dick Slater the year before. Just didn't quite fit with the mold of how the WWF was. But I might be overthinking it. But, obviously the crowd really could care less. So nothing much there for me, John. I gave it a half star as well.
No, Scott, you're right on. As far as Houston, he sticks out in 1987. Everybody was either Jack to the gills or if you're going to be big and with some extra weight. But his skinniness definitely stuck out and didn't belong, and you could tell right away that he wasn't going to be around too long, or he wasn't going to get much of a push. The crowd response was kind of tepid, and yes, Scott, it's New Yorkers. We don't respond to cowboys and or Southerners or Westerners or whatever.
So, cowboys usually call them New York pussies.
we don't respond to we don't like Cowboys. But then again, there are more Cowboy fans, especially this year, than there are the fans of the New York teams. But yeah, and definitely, and Lord and Gorilla, they definitely emphasize it. They're like, oh, Houston needs to put on weight, and Lord was like, his body is very sinewy.
Gotta love Lord Alfred's extra vocabulary. We do have a guy later on who Alfred used to love calling supple. We'll see if he calls him supple later, but yeah.
But even if, like, Houston was good at something, maybe, you know, he can make it work despite the frame and everything, but he wasn't that good. Like, he just, I don't know, maybe it was Terry Gibbs or maybe it was jitters, but
well,
he just...
I would give him credit. His cardio, he was, like, constant motion and good fire.
He weighs 105 pounds. He should fucking have
good cardio. Yeah, one move for another show.
He should have good cardio. He's not carrying anything, you know.
But yeah, the crowd definitely didn't respond to him. And Bobby right away jumped out because Gorilla tried to soup it up, saying, oh, a great response from the crowd. And Brain's like, yeah, both of them like him. And Gorilla's like, what, both of them? He's like, yeah, both people applauding.
yeah, Bobby was on.
Yeah, so. But you could tell that he wasn't going to get much of a push because they spent about three quarters of the match talking about, you know, Patera and Bobby and what was going on with the neck brace and all that. So they were kind of ignoring the match.
Yeah.
Can't blame him. I wish I could have ignored it, too.
I know. I wish I was good, too. So Sam Houston wins the match, and again, your time is 7:53. Next up, JR, a little tag action. Yeah. Not really a WrestleMania 3 rematch, but almost similarly built as such with a little more time. What do we got?
We do have Jimothy Powers teaming up with Paul Roma, taking on Bob Orton and Don Morocco. Yeah, that tag team back from WrestleMania 3, of course. I'm going to team it up. They announced this bout has a 45-minute time limit. That seemed a little excessive when they announced it.
Oh, by the way, on a side note, I don't know if Howard was stuck in traffic, but our Armentos friend Mel Phillips was doing the ring announcing early on here, and then Howard comes in later, so I don't know if the Fink was upstairs counting the VIG or I don't know about
I was actually just reading about that on Kayfabe Memories. I didn't even put together that they were talking about this show. At least they had a thing about that on. They have a Mel Phillips thread and that was called out in there. So
yeah, no, he opened the show for first like two or three matches, and Howard came in eventually. So
well, anyway, like Mel beat Howard to the arena by just a few feet. So all right, this big tag bout again, 45-minute time limit.
A few feet,
just a few feet.
Roma
has ditched SD Jones for a newer, younger partner, if you've noticed. That big team that was working over in Australia is falling apart, I guess. Morocco and Orton is still teaming up here despite really being past due at this point. Both guys kind of need a change. Gorilla puts over Orton as a top technician in the whole world. Orton and Powers start off. Bob controls right away, maintaining control with strikes. Powers reverses a whip and sends Bob hard into the corner, crotching him on the top rope. Jimmy punches away and tags in Romo, who comes off the top with a sledge blow and cranks a side headlock. Gorilla keeps ragging on Bobby about the Patera incident as Orton leverages Romo to the floor. Morocco meets him out there and spikes him on the post. Powers comes down and checks on Romo and helps him up to the apron, where Orton meets him and takes him in with a great delayed vertical suplex. Morocco tags in and keeps the pressure on, but Romo makes a quick comeback and levels him with a dropkick, and then goes for a full Nelson, but he can't lock it in. Morocco reverses to his own, but Romo ducks, and Orton levels Don by accident. Powers tags in, goes to the headlock, but Powers then dodges the Morocco flurry, hits a dropkick, and goes back to the headlock again. Al thinks the 20 pounds Morocco's put on has not hindered him at all, as he can still be successful. But Gorilla says he has a torn gastrocnemius, which is in his leg. Morocco shoots Powers into Orton's knee and then tags in the Cowboy, who hits a belly-to-belly for two. Bobby says he thinks both men are nasty and mean and will sacrifice themselves for any move. Orton locks in a bear hug, but Powers works free. However, that comeback is ended by a hard Morocco clothesline. Morocco goes to a bear hug and tags Orton, who hits a nice dropkick. Orton goes to the middle rope and tries a reverse splash, but Powers gets the knees up and tags Roma, who comes in and cleans house. As things break down, Orton rolls up Roma, but Morocco accidentally turns them over, putting Roma on top for the win. Morocco shocked, and Orton has no idea what's going on. The four men brawl after the bell, and that ends with Morocco and Bob on top. Good tag match here, I thought. Worked well. I thought the heat segment was pretty good. Plenty of fire, but I thought the finish was really confusing and awkward. Like, I just hate when they do these confusing finishes. Like, why would Morocco think he's doing the right thing? Like, he's clearly rolling them the wrong way. It just made him look real stupid. I think Powers is a good partner for Roma. We can talk about that, too. Maybe it'll finally get Roma up and running. He's been just working the circuit for a couple of years now. So I thought, you know, nice win for them. I went 2 stars on this, John.
Yeah, but the Morocco-Orton team was kind of sluggish until the post-match beatdown. They showed more fire. Yeah. when they got pissed and the post-match beatdown. But they should have used some of those moves during the match. So it was like they had to be incited by the loss in order to get hot there. And but it was a good win for Roman Powers. And also Bobby had some good ones. He was constantly killing like Roman Powers as like the pretty boy muscle guys that were as dumb as he was like, oh, Roma landed on his head. He should be all right. That was one of Bobby's one of Bobby's best moves. But otherwise, it's leading to dissension between Ace and Morocco. So you could tell that they didn't have long term plans for this tag team.
Definitely not. They're pretty much done.
Yeah. Your match time, 10:31. I actually like this match. I gave it 2.5. I thought it was pretty good. I think that this is what we could have gotten with the Can-Ams at WrestleMania 3 if they had 10.5 minutes instead of whatever they got, like 4 minutes or whatever. I don't know. I like the way that Morocco and Orton worked. I think they're just like those old kind of grizzled veterans, very methodical, working over these two young guys. I was cool with it. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought that it was this match that that I mentioned earlier. It was this match that Gorilla does the goofy body part thing, and Alfred's laughing just as much as Bobby is. They're both actually laughing at Gorilla, which I think.
Yeah, they kept saying, "Oh, torn gastric meniscus," and Gorilla's like, "Yeah, you know what that means? Bad leg. It's just a bad leg. It's got a bad wheel." So.
Yeah, no, it was pretty funny, again, if the Can-Ams had more time at WrestleMania, I think it would have been like this match, maybe a little better. I was fine with it. I thought the pacing was fine. I like watching Morocco and Orton. Again, they were very they were very methodical. I thought they were a little slow, but not too bad. The post match beatdown was fun. So I kind of watching this match, I get bummed because I feel like had they given Morocco, Orton, and the Can-Ams this kind of time at the Silverdome, I think we would have had a great opener. Mm. But obviously they weren't thinking that way. But so I gave it 2.5. I thought it was actually a pretty good match. I was cool with it. And 2.5 stars for me. And again, your time is 10:31.
D'Amato is usually the one with the gastrocnemius problems. So they weren't called the Young Stallions, right? They were just Still Powers.
They were just Roman Powers. I think they would start being called Young Stallions in the summer because they're on primetime a lot wrestling the Shadows. You see them wrestle on primetimes like 8 straight weeks, and then I think they're called the Young Stallions by like July.
The Young
Scallions.
What do you think of this team for Roma, though? I thought it was a pretty good idea. Like, he was a guy that seemed like he needed a break. They kind of tried the SD Jones thing, and then they bring Powers in. And I thought it was a good fit. Like, two young, good-looking guys. They don't need to be a top-level team, but they could definitely help flesh out the middle of the tag division.
Oh, I thought it was a great combination. Good for both guys. Roma's at the point now, as we said, JR, he's been here a couple of years now. He's not the kind of guy that would look good with like an older, experienced partner. It's not like he's that crazy young. So I wouldn't go nuts having to do that anymore. I think this is perfect. They can kind of be on equal ground and just be a good young team. Because as we're going to see over the next year plus, we're going to see the tag division kind of go through an overhaul. So they're the kind of team that can benefit from that. So I think it's a good move for him. I don't know what you think, John, but I think for him it's a good career move to have a guy that's kind of on equal footing with him rather than needing some grizzled veteran.
Oh, definitely. And it's also good to see like an underdog team, like two guys that did a lot of jobs and stuff, but now they're getting a break. So it's good to see.
All right, so there we go. Okay. So, again, in 10:31. Next up, JR, interesting little singles match here. What do we got?
I don't know if I call it interesting, but it is Coco Beware battling the dangerous one, Danny Davis, former referee, of course. Coco dances down to Morris Day for our next match, as Gorilla says he's been waiting a long time for this one. Odd hankering there to have for a match.
Why?
It's like those guys that run into the old like fan favorites tapes, like, I really want to see Tugboat battle the Warlord. That's my dream.
Yes.
I'm dying for this one. Davis officially striking out on his own here. Al says he's been trained by the Hearts, Morocco, and Orton. So a lot of training for Danny Davis. Coco's shiny pre-match shoe, I thought, was sure something here. Bobby calls Frankie a miserable pigeon, which always makes me laugh. Coco levels Davis with a flying elbow as he attacked at the bell, sending Danny to the floor to regroup with Jimmy. Coco flips him back in, but Davis keeps dodging and hiding as Coco messes with him. Davis catches Coco in the corner, punches away, but Coco quickly punches out of it and knocks Danny outside. Davis comes back in and catches Coco in the gut and lays in some strikes. Coco backdrops him, and Davis bails yet again. Danny returns, but Coco stomps his hand, and he goes to the floor. He returns for a sunset flip, but Coco sits on his chest, and Davis again hits the deck as the crowd's getting restless now. Davis comes back in, and we get a test of strength, which Danny wins for a moment until Coco powers up, hops up, and drills Davis with a great dropkick that sends Danny back outside. Back inside, Coco comes up empty on a charge to the corner and crotches himself. Davis goes to work with kicks and chokes, going for pin covers whenever he can. Davis gets two on a soft-running clothesline as Al says he doesn't have enough weight to keep the man down. Davis hooks a sleeper, but Bobby says he's impressed by his offense, while Gorilla differs. Coco eventually fires up out of the sleeper and elbows free and gets a sleeper of his own, but Davis leverages him hard into the corner to break the hold. The two collide heads, and Davis is up first, but he eats knees on a splash. Coco is all fired up. He starts mowing through Danny, punching him to the floor. Coco follows after, and they end up back inside where the Birdman rattles Davis with 10 headbutts. Coco then follows with a slam, but Davis gets his foot on the ropes to break up the pin. Coco keeps choking away and working over Davis, even with his foot on the ropes. As Coco argues with the refs, Jimmy Hart hands Nux to Davis, and he clocks Coco with him for the win. This was way more fun than it had any right to be. A classic veteran against rookie type match. Davis is completely overmatched the entire way, but steals the win. Lots of energy, and Coco looked good leading the match. It was a good heat builder for Davis. It caught me off guard. Maybe Gorilla was right for wanting to see this match. I went a star and a half on this one, Scott.
Your match time, I was kind of floored when I saw it. 13:15.
Yeah, that was a long one. The floor stuff got old. I get what he's doing because he's kind of a slimy sneak, so he keeps bailing outside to the floor and stuff. Like, but that got by the eighth time, that got kind of old, you know.
Yeah. I gave it a star. I was not thrilled for a few reasons. Number one, it's a big spot for Danny. I think this is the first time we see – I think major television singles match. I'm sure he's wrestled on Cindy, Superstars, and Challenge, but this might be his first singles match on like a big stage like The Garden or on national TV. But who'd you say trained him? Orton, Morocco, and who?
The Hart Foundation.
Yeah, well, they should all be fired because he fucking sucks. I mean, he doesn't know where to stand. He doesn't sell right. He was a fucking disaster in this match. I kind of felt bad for Coco. I thought he was kind of a mess, bouncing off the ropes wrong and he's looking out of place. I don't know what the hell the problem was.
But I kind of don't mind it for Davis because it's the gimmick, right? The gimmick is that he's new and kind of like he's just like sucks and he's just sneaking out wins. I don't know. It's like he's not meant to be.
Yeah, I guess, but I mean, I think he went overboard on it because it really. It's one thing to look inexperienced or take a beating. It's another thing to just look like you have no idea what the hell you're doing, and I think he almost went a little too far with it. But, and I was floored by the finish. If I was Coco, I'd be a little miffed. I didn't realize he was going to get this kind of push where Coco would have to job to him. They might as well had him. He should have wrestled somebody like This has been a good spot for like SD Jones. Because I feel like Coco is a guy that even this early on that, you should at least, I don't say protect him, but this probably isn't a match you give him. I would have given him maybe an experienced guy like an SD Jones or somebody. He'd have been good to beat the shit out of Danny and then lose cheap. I wasn't thrilled with the whole setup here. I do give it a star, but I mean, Danny, the premise of him not knowing what he's doing almost went too far to the point where the match was awful. And I think that Coco shouldn't have had to eat the pin here. I think they should have given this to like a upper experienced jobber rather than somebody like Coco. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Scott, because Coco got a huge pop going to the ring. The MSG crowd really loved him with the bird, and so right away for Coco to eat a pin to Danny Davis in his first match, it's a little rough. It kind of shows that they didn't think much of Coco, and he deserved more because he got a huge pop. But as far as Davis is concerned, the announcers, they talked about it a little bit, about how he used to be a ref and he screwed everybody over. But then they kind of left it alone. I don't think they emphasized that enough, and they kind of just treated him like a regular wrestler, like he's a 10-year veteran that's been wrestling. They should have emphasized more that he was a referee who got fired, and now he's trying to. You know, he's trying to sneak his way in as a wrestler, so I don't think they emphasize enough. Did you guys catch that, or what do you guys think?
I could see that, John. I mean, Gorilla does mention consistently about, you know, the Hart Foundation. You know, he pretty much says in the beginning he was handed the tag straps. He handed the tag straps to the Hart Foundation.
But then once the match started, they're treating him like he's a 10-year veteran, and also I think they should have had him in there. Like for a big to build heat, they should have had him in there. Like Tito, somebody screwed over.
Yeah.
Like Coco is just kind of random. They should have had somebody that, you know, they built that angle like either Tito or one of the Bulldogs. For somebody screwed over. Although, like Scott said, I understand if you want to build him up a little and give him a win, make it on SD. But this kind of shits on Coco. Even though it was a screw job finish, it kind of shits on him. And also the Davis, the blouse or whatever, that shirt that they had him.
It looks worse and worse.
Yeah, he's a little built, but he's not a tall guy. So that, I guess they wanted to show that he's got a little. Muscle.
I didn't think it was an awful. I didn't think it was an awful loss for Coke. I mean, he hit him with the knucks, and he clearly dominated the entire match. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And I mean, Davis's heat was still pretty good. Like. He was just coming off Mania. I don't think he had dissipated yet. So I actually was okay with this. I didn't mind Coco losing to him. But you're right, the commentary was weird the way they were talking about it. They weren't really getting over the story of Davis sucking. Like they would try to make it like he didn't. When the story should have been, this guy's way in over his head. He doesn't belong out there. But I guess that wasn't the directive. But I was okay with Coco losing here. That didn't really bother me.
And Coco sold it like he got knocked out by Mike Tyson.
He
was down for like 5 minutes.
Right? Yeah.
And did you guys catch when Lord Alfred was like, Coco's hurting real bad. His lips are swollen badly.
That's
horrible. Just awful.
Oh, God.
Just awful.
That was great. So Danny Davis gets the win, and again, your match time, 13:15. So they gave him a lot of time, more than I would have expected for this match.
Yeah. You know who looked like Davis was trained by? Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah.
All punches,
all
kicks,
the floor.
Falling.
I know, yeah.
No, they're going to the floor every 30 seconds is what got old. It's like every fucking 2 seconds. But you know what? He did learn a bit from the Harts, because the Harts do that shit a lot, too, at this point. Like, all these Hart Foundation matches that we watch, they constantly go to the fucking floor. I think it was just an epidemic in the whole company at this point. Like, every match right now, it feels like the heels go to the floor, like, 5 times to start the fucking match. But, all right,
tonight, we're going to see more of that. Yeah.
So we got a big match coming up here, a huge debut, as Dave Barbie makes his debut against the supple one, Lanny Poffo. Our buddy Jeff didn't find a ton of info on Dave Barbie. Born in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, started wrestling in 1984 as a jobber. He did have a notable match in 85 where he and Tiger Chung Lee teamed in a tag team title match against the U.S. Express in Poughkeepsie. In 1986, Barbie wrestled in the Stampede Wrestling under the name Adolf Barbie. Quit the gimmick.
What?
Jesus.
Could have cast him, Aaron, for the Christmas show. Dave Barbie would only wrestle one more match after this, a loss to SD Jones on May 29th in Pittsburgh. During his tenure, his record was 2-44, so he's been around for a while here. He gets one little MSG tilt on his way out the door. A very random match, Lanny Poffo versus this no-name, 4 matches into the card. And by the way, I was thinking, too, when you mentioned the length of that previous match, that was probably partially to fill for that Dream Team Rougeau's match that didn't happen,
probably.
I'm guessing, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's probably true.
I'm sure that some of the fill was there. All right, Poffo's really settled in as this fodder at this point. Barbie looks like a guy from King of Prussia would look, I thought. Like when they said he was from King of Prussia, well, that makes sense. Poffo reads a poem for us on the topic of Jerry Lewis and his telethon, which, did that used to be earlier in the year? I thought that was always Labor Day.
No,
it is
Memorial.
Labor Day.
It was Memorial.
I think it's Labor Day. Okay. I don't know. Okay. Poffo's an idiot. Probably had the wrong bag. Probably had his wrong luggage.
Well, I didn't know if it used to be Memorial Day, maybe. Was it always Labor Day?
As far as I always knew, it was always Labor Day.
So. It was weird. It was the way he talked about it. It was like it was happening right then.
Yeah.
He throws out his frisbees. Gorilla, maybe they made like a deal with Lewis. Or maybe Dirty F just like made an agreement with him to help or something. Gorilla takes one and bops Bobby in the head with the frisbee, and then Bobby just sells it gloriously. I thought it was so good. Barbie comes strongly at Lanny, but they break on the ropes. Gorilla says once Barbie learns how to use his size and power, he'll be very dangerous, but I don't see that happening. Barbie viciously slams Poffo as Gorilla asks Bobby. Bobby, Barbie, all of them. How long he'll be in a neck brace, and Bobby says he doesn't know. Poffo grounds Barbie, but the big man fights to his feet and clubs Lanny down with some hard forearms. Poffo punches back into it, lands an elbow to the neck. Things reset, but Barbie goes to work in control with his power, hot-shotting Lanny across the top rope and hitting a neck breaker for one. Poffo fends Barbie off with kicks as the crowd has checked out completely. Barbie catches Poffo and slams him again and then drops some fists for a near fall. Barbie dumps Poffo as Al says he needs a manager or some direction. And Bobby dissects his issues pretty nicely, I thought. It was pretty cool the way he broke down his issues. Bobby says he can make a champion out of him, though. Gorilla, great line here, says he hasn't made a champion out of anyone in his stable yet, so what makes him think he can take Bobby to the title? Back inside, Barbie levels Poffo with a clothesline for two as Al chastises the pin attempts. Poffo chucks Barbie to the floor as Gorilla stirs the shit with Bobby and Jimmy Hart. Poffo keeps Barbie on the floor as Gorilla compliments his hair. Poffo gets frustrated. Gorilla, Al, and Bobby sell it as killer instinct. Lanny misses a dropkick, and Barbie just keeps clubbing away and gets a suplex for two with a very sloppy cover. Gorilla keeps trolling Bobby on his lack of gold. Bobby says it's all a big conspiracy. Poffo slams Barbie and gets his backflip dive off the second rope for the win. A fucking mess. Barbie was lost the whole time. A couple moves were okay, but other than that, just nothing. Lanny clearly frustrated as well with everything. Barbie just needs to keep training, but he only got one more match anyway, so I went a big old fucking dud on this one, John.
Yeah, Justin, I know you're a humble guy and you don't like to brag, but on a related note, I heard that you got a special video message from Lanny Poffo showing you that for your birthday. Showing him doing a down his grove dive on his own schmance. special.
I knew that was coming.
Did you write that one down in your hand so you didn't butcher it?
I didn't write it down. Maybe I should have because I almost butchered it. I had to come up with that because I can't talk about this match. This is the result of having three cards, three different cities on one night where you got to go to. I mean, you could tell Lanny had nothing going on because he didn't even make like the WrestleMania card as a face. So he was number 19 as far as the faces, and the crowd was just a tepid response to Lanny. And Gorilla was such a dick throwing those frisbees and making Brain move his
awesome.
Neck and so that, yeah, Gorilla was such a dick. And then Bobby was like, "Oh, if I had Barbie in my stable, I could make him a champion." Gorilla was like, "You can't even make your own guy."
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, that the commentary was about the only thing good out of this match.
I'll job anywhere.
King of Prussia.
No one in that band could possibly have better hair than Dave Barbie, so. Can you imagine the guy in Stampede? Adolf Bobby! Fucking ridiculous, that hair.
Yeah, that was a new doll that was going to be released that Christmas. The Adolf Barbie doll.
The Adolf Barbie doll, that's right. Your match time, 8:05. I think this is another match that probably got a few minutes extra.
The crowd was getting restless during this. There was a lot of boring.
Yeah. I'd like to hear Dave Barbie say, "No hanky panky," in King of Prussia.
You think that's what the Adolf thing was?
Adolf!
Because he's from Prussia.
Adolf Barbie.
I am the King of Prussia, Adolf.
One of your favorite spots, one of your favorite jobber spots there, Johnny. A little King of Prussia next to Comac, New York. There's only one guy that comes from the great Comac, New York. Yeah, this match is fucking garbage. Lanny is just, he's become totally. Maybe Lanny's hair was closer to the guys
Barbie.
In this band, girls in this band, than a fucking Dave Barbie. Yeah, this match is trash. I mean, it's obvious who the better Poffo brother is because Lanny just brings nothing to the table. I mean, nothing, zero. And I don't know what's happened now, but he can't handle any. Even these fucking bad jobbers, he can't handle anymore. I mean, it's just a clumsy mess. It's It's a shame. I think I would have handled I think I could have handled Dino Bravo over over this match. But yeah, pretty awful. I gave it a dud as well. Did nobody any favors. Crowd could care less. They knew the big match of the night was coming soon, and I think they anticipated it was going to be next. So I think they kind of took a shit, got some nachos or something during this match because there was nothing on the table here. So Lanny Poffitt gets the win.
Come on, Lanny, suck your penis.
Drop a deuce on one of those frisbees. Down his Grove steamer on one of those frisbees.
Down his Grove steamer.
Oh, God. This match was a fucking Down his Grove steamer, that's for sure. Oh, Jesus. All right, why don't we get out and move to the business at hand. We have our own title match of the evening, JR, and it's a pretty big one. Pretty big one.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is a big one. We have Hulk Hogan battling the King Harley Race. Jeff Machado, not a Harley Race fan yet again, as we learned on this recent episode of Jeff Learns Wrestling. Check it out. Big match here as we find out Hulk Hogan's first legit challenger since WrestleMania 3. Andre's still lingering, but Hogan now has to deal with another Heenan family member. Race feels like a big deal here with his regalia and music, and Bobby, he's just looking absurd in his fucking neck brace. Could he have gotten a bigger neck brace? I think he's like completely like choking the shit out of him.
It takes you can't even see his head. It's like headgear. It's like crazy.
Gorilla mocks it.
So does Jeff hate Harley because he just watched Dave Barbie and he thought they were related? Maybe because they have the same hair. Maybe.
No, he watched Survivor Series 87. He's been anti Harley everything I've showed him. So
wow. Okay.
He didn't like that whole show. Check it out. What his thoughts are. He was very angry this week, Jeff. He had a lot going on. You can listen about our sandwich fiasco, his work injuries. A lot going on in that episode. Gorilla mocks the shoestring that's keeping Harley Race's crown on. That made me laugh. Have you ever seen a king that needs a shoestring to keep his crown on?
Looks so dumb.
Chin strap. Gorilla call this chin strap.
Yeah.
Hogan enters to a monster pop, as always, post WrestleMania 3. Seems like a bit of a new man for some reason. Just overall, the whole WWF does in general, in some ways. We get some feeling out here to start as Race lands the first blow with a knee to the gut and then some clubbing blows to the back and shots to the head. Hogan reverses a whip and meets Race in the corner with a clothesline and a second one that knocks him to the top, over the top to the floor. Hogan yanks Race back inside as the king begs off and catches the champ with a headbutt to the gut. Leverages him to the floor. Hogan slides back, but Race is all over him with kicks and elbows and gets some near falls. Hogan comes back with punches and a running elbow, but then knocks Race outside with a big boot. Hogan follows out, punches away some more, but Race goes to the eyes and runs Hulk to the steel barricade. Race tries for a falling headbutt, but Hogan dodges him, crashes hard to the concrete. Back inside, Hulk slams Race, but whiffs on an elbow drop, and Harley pops up and grabs a sleeper, busting the champ down to his knees. The crowd rallies Hogan as he powers out of the hold and lays in some right hands and elbows. Race cuts him back off and clobbers Hulk, eventually tearing him open with headbutts. Race heads up top, but Hulk dodges a falling headbutt, and Hogan rolls Harley up for the win. As Hogan poses, Harley sneaks back in and drills him with the belt to the forehead, leaving Hogan laid out with the title draped across him. That was a really fun match. I didn't want it to end. It was too quick. Like many of these Hogan sprints, it made Race look really strong too, as he beat himself and Hulk had to desperately roll him up to win it. Hogan sold well after the bell too, bloodied and limping around until Race attacked him. Really tight brawl, some fun spots. I'd like to see a rematch of these guys. I would. Race continues to be a workhorse on these shows, and Hogan's still the champ, still busting the ass as well. So I went 2.5. That was, again, mainly only because it's kind of short, doesn't really get going, but the potential's there for something really good between these guys.
Yeah, your match time 7:54, and I gave this 2.5 as well. I almost wanted to give it, if we were doing quarters, I might have given it 2.75. I mean, if you're an old-time fan, probably almost a dream match for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, Harley's, you know, made the rounds around the world, but I don't think, I can't imagine, maybe Kelly would know, or even Pete, unless you maybe know John, but I can't think of where else these two would have wrestled. Hogan was never in Crockett, so I don't know if it was down there. Maybe the AWA? I don't know. Houston, probably? I don't think so. This might be the first time that these two have ever actually hooked up.
Well, they might have fought. Did they fight somewhere else? This might not be the first match. They might have fought elsewhere in, around the country.
Well, yeah, I'm talking kind of more high profile, like, you know, Garden or big, that. Yeah, when I'm saying that, I mean like high profile, like, you know, MSG or national TV or something like that. I don't think they ever had like a big match in, because I don't think Hogan was in Crockett or not. This might be it. I mean, maybe a random match in Japan or something, maybe. I don't know. But it, obviously, it's loaded with star power. And if you're an old-time fan and you're obviously in the know, you obviously know that Harley wrestled other places. It's actually a huge deal. I like Hogan wearing the alternate red T-shirt in this match. Normally, he wears yellow with red print, and today he's wearing red with yellow print, which he normally doesn't do. So alternate shirt tonight for Hogan. Fun match. The ending kind of was lame. I mean, Hogan with a cheap roll-up. I understood the psychology of it. You know, with, and then blaming Bobby like they normally do, that Harley went too far with the headbutt. But I thought the brawl was great. I mean, you had two guys. You know, Bobby's, I mean, Bobby. Hogan is moderately experienced. Obviously, he's been in the business, you know, at this point, what, almost 8 years. But, I mean, Harley's Harley. I mean, the guy's a stud in terms of just ring experience. So this was a great combo of two different guys who wrestle differently, but put on a tremendous brawl, and you'll see the repercussions of it later in the show.
Looks like the first match this year was in Richfield, Ohio, May 8th.
Okay.
And the first televised one was in Philly, May 9th.
Okay, so they were probably, obviously they were on Prism. But yeah, I don't think they wrestled any other promotions, Crockett or anything like that. Anyway, I thought the psychology was great. And it was a good brawl. And we've said this before, JR, and I'm curious your thoughts too, John, because we talked about this with Kelly. I love watching Hogan in non-national atmosphere. Whenever we watch Hogan in an MSG match, or if you're watching him, maybe, John, you've seen him in the past at house shows, you know, at the Coliseum, or I saw him in New Haven, or, you know, Philly or Boston. Hogan wrestles differently than when he's wrestling on Saturday Night's Main Event or wrestling on pay-per-view. I feel like he's able to kind of let loose a little bit that he's not allowed to do on national TV. And I've always said that because a lot of people, when I was a kid, a lot of people used to say that, you know, I'm so upset that Hogan gets neutered by Vince, because 4 years earlier, you know, Hogan won the IWGP tournament, which is now, of course, it's the 80s term for the G1 Climax. He won that tournament in 83, 4 years earlier. He beat Inoki. You think to yourself, you know, Hogan can't go there and lumber around like an oaf against these guys. You know, he's got to kind of show some chops. And apparently some people I've seen read like magazines and on boards have tapes of this tournament. And apparently Hogan's like a completely different guy when he wrestles in Japan than when he's here. And I feel that same way when Hogan wrestles house shows and you know, local events, than when he's got to do Saturday's Main Events or pay-per-views, where he's got to kind of do the whole TV formulaic way of his matches. And he's so vicious. Like, we've seen the Kamala matches. We obviously the great matches with Savage. And this is another great example. He's all bloodied up and everything. Like, we don't get to see that from Hogan a lot. And I think it helps his credibility every time out as champion, as time has gone on since he's been champion in these, well, it's, you know, 3 years. It's a long time. We're coming on 3.5 years now. And I feel like his credibility gains with the fans when he actually adds a different, you know, when he takes it to the next level and has to, I don't want to say wrestle dirty, but bring a little extra, you know, extra flavor, extra spice to the matches that you don't get to see on, like, the paint-by-numbers Saturday's Main Event or the paint-by-numbers pay-per-view matches. So that's why I love any time Hogan gets a good opponent on our MSG journey, and obviously Harley's Harley. Jeff Machado's opinion aside, you know, he's one of the greatest of all time. Obviously, he's, you know, in the twilight of his career, but I mean, he still could bring the goods. So I thought this was a great match. I agree with you, JR. And as we see later on, we know a rematch is probably coming, but just based on the way this ended, 2.5 stars. I would have given it 2.75. I don't know if it's quite 3, but maybe if they had 4 or 5 more minutes, maybe 3.
Yeah, it definitely cuts off before it could crack that level. Harley's going to rank pretty high on my greatest WWE wrestler ever list, by the way.
I got to take a look at my list again before I hand. I'm not sure. I got to see where I have him. But anyway, great match, 754, John. And I'm curious your thoughts on Hogan, too. Obviously, all the Garden matches you watched over the years. that he wrestles differently in the local scenario than he does on like national TV.
Oh, right. A wider variety of moves are used. And like you said, Scott, on the pay-per-views and the Saturday Night's Main Event, he sticks to his four or five hits. If you call it, you know, his greatest hits. And he definitely experiments more on these house shows. This was a rare finish where he doesn't bust out the leg drop because they're setting up for a rematch. So the finish was a little wasn't anything special, which takes away from rating the match 3 or 4 stars. But I'm just curious for your opinion. I don't mean to diss Harley, and I love Harley as much. He's a legend and everything. But what do you guys think that after Hogan vanquished Andre at WrestleMania, does anybody take Harley serious as a contender? Like there's no chance that Hulk's going to lose to Harley after vanquishing Andre at WrestleMania. There's no way that Hogan's going to lose the belt here. So what do you guys think of that? I think that takes it away a little.
No, it's a good point.
Interesting. I never thought of it that way.
I think Bobby being in the mix helps. You know, like they could steal it from him. You know, because Bobby's involved, so you never know what could happen. So I think that helps a bit. It's definitely a problem, though. I mean, it's definitely a problem.
Yeah, because after going to Andre, like their heels are really in a down period now, because especially they turned all these guys' face. So who are the contenders? Because Andre's got to take off for a while. So
yeah,
so
we
who is that for Hogan? Yeah.
We talked about it. Was it the Science Man event, Scott? We kind of got into this, like who. Or was it maybe it was three? I don't know. I know we talked about this with maybe it was when Piper was leaving. We kind of talked. I don't know, but we get into the lack of depth on the heel side right now.
Yeah, no, we did. It was during WrestleMania 3.
No, it's definitely an issue. I mean, and we'll see it again in a few years when Hogan's on the other end of losing the match. The lack of all of a sudden credible challengers because he just beat the best guy. It's like, you know, he just beat fucking Andre the Giant, right? Like, who is possibly going to beat him now? I think Bobby's the key, and I think the other key is building up big crafty heels that can maybe steal the title from the Hulkster, not necessarily overpower or over, you know, strength him. I think that's why it's key what we'll see in about 8 months' time for them to have done is to almost reset the clock on Hogan, you know what I mean? And do what they do. Because for right now, yeah, it's a tough rest of the year until they get Andre back in business.
And also with the post match, Harley just gives him one belt shot and that's it.
Yeah,
I mean it wasn't like a vicious, overbearing beatdown. So
yeah, I was definitely expecting more out of that.
And also, if you're gonna try to lead to set up some rematches, have Harley win by countout or have a DQ or something. I mean, here it's like, okay, Hulk's like I already pinned them, so why should I give him a rematch? What do you guys think about that? Or is that,
yeah.
You
know, no, I agree. I
didn't think the post match was vicious enough. It was just one shot. I think Hulk's like, I have to get him in the ring again. So.
Well, you wonder how much
Bobby.
Yeah, I would
expect Harley to beat him up more.
Well, you could wonder too how much like Bobby played a role in that. You know what I mean? Like how, you know, like is he so just done with Bobby and his guys beating the shit out of him and attacking him that he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to take you all out. You know, it could be more along those lines. But yeah, he could have done a bit more.
And also, has Harley really been built up like in '86 when they set up for the Kamala matches? Kamala beat the fuck out of George Steele. That was an awesome squash, and that's how you build up a contender for Hulk. It's like, oh, okay, Kamala just fucking destroyed George Steele, which is good. But what has Harley kind of done? He won kind of screwy at WrestleMania over JYD. I mean, they didn't really show Harley like beating anybody to build up to this too.
Well, I think they look at the win over JYD in that feud as being a big thing.
Yeah,
like I think they looked at JYD as being like a main event guy. So Harley,
yeah, but do you guys know what I'm saying? Like when they built up like Kamala, the way he destroyed Steel.
I think it's
like,
Bobby. Like that. I think Bobby's the hook.
Bobby's enough.
Yeah, I think it's just that another Bobby guy is coming at him, and you never know what tricks Bobby has up his sleeve, and Bobby could screw Hogan. Who's going to turn on Hogan next? Because I think Bobby is just the fucking draw at this point. Like I think they probably realize what you're saying is they didn't have anyone fully credible, so they're like, all right, Race has name value, you know, so maybe he's not built up here as much, but he's a name. He's the king. He's got Bobby. So, you know, it's probably enough for an MSG match. I think they're just trying to survive the summer with Hulk just to get to Andre coming back, honestly. I think they were probably just hoping to draw on the back of his name and not worry as much about the challenger. That's what it seems like.
Mm. That's what I was assuming, too. But, yeah, I mean, John, I mean, I understand I agree with JR in that point. I mean, JYD is JYD. The match wasn't great, but it is a win over a guy that at one point we've said was the number two babyface in the company. So I think that's where they got that from. And just Harley's Harley. I mean, kind of a cred thing. And it does continue the Bobby storyline. I Bobby's definitely the linchpin there. I mean, maybe Hercules could have been right. A possibility too. You know, we obviously saw him wrestle. You know, he was in Tacoma or no, he was in Davenport, Iowa, facing Billy Jerk for like the 7,000th time.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I mean, your point's valid, choices. John. No, your point's definitely valid in the sense that visually, once you beat Andre, what the hell do you do then? You know, there's like nothing left. So it's definitely something to think about. And maybe with, you know, the fact Andre took this summer hiatus, maybe that actually hurt the company or hurt the creative quotient at this point about trying to get guys for Hogan because you beat the best. There's, you know, what's there left to do? So anyway, Hulk Hogan gets the win and retains his World Wrestling Federation championship in 754. Clearly I feel like we have more to come from this feud.
Mm-hmm.
All right, why don't we take a break? Let the crowd settle down. JR, so far, 50-50? Slightly thumbs up?
No, you're lucky if it's 595 right now.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, other than Hogan, it's been pretty, I mean, I thought the tag was pretty good. I thought the tag was pretty good with...
If you love two-star matches, Karen, your show. Yep, this is your show.
Well, it's a fucking house show. Find me a five.
No, give me something. There's nothing here.
A two is a
nothing.
Five.
It's a bunch of nothing.
Oh, God.
I'm a Barbie girl.
John, what do you think so far?
I'm a Barbie girl. Yeah, not yeah. Not so much.
Greatest hair in the world.
This is a rough one. This really shows that they were in three different cities. It definitely shows.
It's a Barbie girl with self-inflicted blowjobs.
All right. When we come back, we will have we have four more matches, including our pinch-hitting main event. But first, let's get some words, and then we'll be back after this.
Come on, Lanny, come deep throat me.
Gave you my heart.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
If you ever take a trip. This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think Howard Finkel, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
In your side, I'll wait for you. Sleight of hand and twist of fate.
All right, Nation, we are back. Please to be podcast episode number 473, taking a look at the May 87 MSG House Show, which has been okay. I hope you enjoyed that break. Hope you enjoyed everything else going on at PlayStation.com. And, you know, we're talking Lanny Poffo, and that's a dude who likes to get his penis sucked. And he says to whoever's around in the room with him, it's going to get sucked with or without you. And I believe there was a song playing in the background with, of course, by U2. Blah. But here to talk about that and more, that is the number one song in the land this week, is Scott Crisco with our Pop Culture Corner. I hate that fucking song.
Thank you, JR. Actually, I love it. One of my favorites, because it's one of the best albums of the year in 1987. The Joshua Tree, tremendous album, and this was probably the best song from it, at least best hit from it. There's some other album cuts that are good. But this is the number one song, with or without you.
To be worse than the Joshua Tree.
The Joshua Tree, give a trivia. At number two, Jody Watley, I'm looking for a new love, baby. So we actually had that song a couple weeks ago when we had the Strength's Main Event show. Number three, the former number one, Little Cutting Crew, I just died in your arms tonight, was our number one. It's dropped to three. Number four, our girl Madonna, not singing in Swedish, La Isla Bonita, Spred Gorgin, V Gorgin. Number five, from the movie, I can't remember the movie now. I think it had, this one that had Gene Wilder in it, called Lady in Red, Christa Berg.
Lady in Red.
Number six, Heat of the Night by Bryan Adams. And number seven, Big Love by Fleetwood Mac. I didn't realize they were still at album. Well, I guess Tangle and the Night came out at that point. Number eight, You Keep Me Hanging On by Kim Wilde. She of course, sang Kids in America earlier in the decade. Number nine, probably their first hit, Little Poison with Talk Dirty to Me. And at number 10, a classic. This is a big song, my eighth grade dances, Always by Atlantic Star.
Miles Davis.
Oh. Miles Davis, yes. Yes. So there's your top 10. Of course, it came out 2 days before on Saturday the 16th of May. And your number one song, once again, With or Without You by U2.
Go all right, JR, to La Isla Bonita High School.
No Swedish movies, JR. Two movies came out the previous Friday. But one of them, I know John definitely remembers because it was probably one of the most infamously terrible movies of all time. And we'll get to it in a minute. But here's the first one. It made $13 million, came out on Friday, a horror movie called The Gate. That's it.
A horror movie?
Huh. A horror movie?
12-year-old Glenn has a nightmare of finding his home abandoned. then going into his treehouse only for it to be struck by lightning and collapse in his backyard. Workers have cut down a tree and unearthed a geode. Glenn returns with an older friend, Terry, to investigate. Through the workers attempted to fill the hole left by the tree, Glenn and Terry breach the surface, finding a large geode. Glenn catches a splinter and leaves a small bit of blood behind. Starring Stephen Dorff, Krista Denton, Lewis Tripp, Kelly Rowland. No, not Kelly Rowland. Kelly Rowan.
Kelly Rowland. She would have been like, what, six?
And Nelly, I love you. Jennifer Irwin and Carl Cranes. Fuck, is that Dorff does golf, that guy? No, it's not him.
No, Stephen Dorff's an actor. Stephen Dorff was in the Aerosmith. This is Dorff.
Who's the Dorff does golf? Who's that guy?
Tim Conway was Dorff. Stephen Dorff, you nitwit. He was in the Aerosmith. He was in the Alicia Silverstone videos.
Oh, whatever. I wasn't looking at Stephen Dorff in those videos.
You say it with such defiance. Stephen Dorff.
I thought that was Dorff does golf.
I thought you were going to say Glenn goes in his treehouse and creates a spectacular show. And then gets hit by lightning.
It was almost like the St. Mary's where Glenn defiantly stood under the tree while hail pelted him.
Yeah, well, hail beat him down, yes. All right. And the number one movie that weekend, it was its brief moment of glory. It made $14,375,181. But it was on a $40 million budget. It had two of the greatest actors of all time in it, and they thought it was going to be like this great comedy hit, but it ended up being one of the biggest bombs in the history of cinema. John, are you hinting? Do you have a hint of what I'm talking about? Do you think you know what movie I'm talking about? Two
Ishtar.
Very well-known actors.
Ishtar.
Oh, that's going to be Plans from – was it? I messed it up. Was it Seinfeld one, John? Plans from Outer Space 9 or whatever the fuck it was.
Oh, Plan 9 from Outer Space. Yeah.
Yes. No, this is Ishtar. It's a comedy, but it wasn't funny at all. Ishtar. Ishtar.
Ishtar. It's about a neuro massage. All right. Let me see here.
Yeah. Tell them who starred in it.
I'll get there.
The neuro massage will. The neuro massage will come right into come right into play.
Chuck Clark and Lyle Rogers are inept songwriters who are down on their luck, but dream of becoming a popular singing duo in the mold of Simon and Garfunkel. They are poorly received at a local open mic night. Agent Marty Freed offers to book them as lounge singers in a hotel in Marrakesh, Morocco, singing Peg, explaining the last act quit due to the political unrest in the area. Nearly broke and both single without any options, Lyle and Chuck decide to take the gig, starring Dustin Hoffman from Star Wars, Warren Beatty, Isabella Johnny, Charles Grodin, Jack Weston, Tess Harper, Carol Kane, Fred Melamed, Bill Bailey, Christine Rose, Abe Kroll, Matt Frewer, and the beat goes on.
Matt Frewer, Max Headroom. I remember this was a big deal. You know, Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman in the same movie. Oh my God, greatest of all time. And the movie was absolutely unwatchable shit. It was like one of the worst things ever made. So there you go. Just two movies that came out that Friday. Major League Baseball on this Monday.
I think Lanny Poffa did the Ishtar to Dave Barbie.
And then he did the gate to himself.
By the way, I read the rest of the gate while you were babbling. It sounded like it sounds very much like Stranger Things. Like I think that's maybe – is that where they got some of it?
It might be, yeah. It might sound like Stranger Things.
If you read it, it sounds very similar.
It does, yes. Yep. In Major League Baseball on this Monday – there were nine games on tap. Our two teams, gentlemen, both playing California teams, one at home, one on the road. The Mets lost at Shea to the Padres 7-5. We lost to Dave Dravecki, and obviously that's before his arm fell off. And the Yankees out in Oakland beat the A's 2-1 behind Tommy John. Tim Stoddard got the save. I totally forgot Tim Stoddard was a Yankee.
Hey, that's the guy that had the surgery after, right?
Yes, they did. The standings at the moment in the AL East, the Yankees in first place at 25-13.
Fuck off, Kelly.
The Royals, actually in the Blue Jays are in second. The Royals lead the West at 21-14, 2.5 ahead of Seattle. Cubs lead the East. Actually, Cubs and Cardinals are tied for first in the NL East, 3.5 behind the Expos. The Mets were off to a slow start. They were 16-20. Johnny, I don't remember them starting off. I mean, I know they struggled middle of the year, but I didn't think they were this bad this early. And the Reds lead the West by half a game over the Giants. No games in the NBA on this evening. They were in the midst of the conference finals. The night before, the Lakers won at home over the Sonics, so they led 1-0. And the next night would be game one from the Boston Garden between the Celtics and the Pistons in the East Finals. Stanley Cup Finals off night. The previous night was game one of the Stanley Cup Finals from the Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton. The Oilers beat the Flyers, so it's an off day. The Oilers lead 1-0. And that is your Pop Culture Corner. Let us head back to the Garden and some intermission interviews. JR, what do we got?
All right, speaking of Nuru massages, Gorilla and Allah with Fabulous Moolah talking about her illustrious career. Moolah has enjoyed every minute, loves the wrestling and the money. Gorilla talks about Debbie Combs. Al asks about Moolah's love life. Al says Combs is the biggest opponent for Moolah in a while and wonders if she can keep it up. Al predicts that Moolah will lose right in front of her face. I thought that was a little ballsy. You're like, come on, nothing for the ballsy. God damn you all. Gorilla chats with Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart about Honky's big match with Jake tonight. Honky sings a bit as a joke. D'Amato's real quiet. I'm hoping he's on mute laughing. Honky sings a bit as a joke about the match. After the match, Gorilla tells Al that Jake is hurt and is being replaced by Ken Patera. Honky will be in for a big surprise once he gets out there. Then Gorilla and Al with Ken Patera, who talks about Jake the Snake Roberts' injury, giving him a shot to take on and beat the Honky Tonk Man tonight. He will shove the blowhorn up Jimmy's ass and also takes out Heenan if he shows up too. He's obsessed with Heenan. He's going to work him into everything. He says Heenan has a conspiracy going, putting everyone in his way. By the way, I got to teach Jeff about the McDonald's incident on Jeff Learns Wrestling as well, and he loved that. So there you go. He felt him and Patera were kindred spirits because they both get angry at McDonald's. Any thoughts on any of these interviews? Pause the Moolah porn, John. Anything?
Nah, once again, Gorilla's being a real dick tonight. He's like, oh, Honky doesn't know that Jake's not here. I mean, isn't that a little fucked up that the announcer knows and the guy wrestling doesn't even know that his opponent is going to be changed? That's a little messed up. And also, Patera is a great interview. All he talks about, you know, he says the weasel 19 times. It's like, yeah, didn't we get over Cole Cullen and the Weasel like 2 years ago? Mm. And that's all, you know, he's running that into the ground.
And I'm not high on Gorilla tonight, huh?
Nah.
Nah.
All right. Anything for you, Scott? You
go. Patera's hair didn't get as bad as it would eventually get. Yeah. I will say that. His hair doesn't look too bad. But he's just such a schlub now. Fucking Patera. I don't know.
I did.
Honky's deaf.
God.
I was going to say, Honky seems on cloud nine now. After, obviously, he had a big win at Mania. So the Honky's in pretty good shape right now. Because it's kind of a shame that the main event's not going to be as good because nobody cares about Patera yet. So, but and Moolah's Moolah Shmoolah. It's funny how they, you know, they've trashed Moolah for years, and now that she's kind of a pseudo babyface, you know, Gorilla kisses her ass. But I agree with you, John. Gorilla seems a little off tonight, like something's pissing him off. It's like going overboard on everything.
Yeah, he's wishing that Debbie Combs had a lot on his ball. You know.
You look at her? Maybe.
Fucking Debbie Combs. I love Al. Alfred is picking Debbie Combs right in front of Moolah. It was great. I think you're going to lose tonight.
She's got the lot on the ball.
Speaking of, I was incorrect. I said earlier that it was our lone title match, but we have a title match right here.
Oh, God, I wish we didn't. And that is the Fabulous Moolah. Taking on Debbie Combs. Must be a down month if they're dragging out this aimless women's nonsense. Fink Gorilla now really put over Moolah. She gets a mixed reaction, but it seems like they're trying to push her to being a face here tonight. Moolah isn't acting as brashly either. Combs looks like a homeless woman's very aged Christina Applegate, I thought, out there. I'm trying to downplay like as much as I can with just saying like the general visage of Christina Applegate by looking very homely version, though. We start with some shoving, including Moolah shoving the ref, as Al calls her Coombs. Combs dominates with a snap mares and dropkick that sends Moolah bailing to regroup outside. I mean, maybe Moolah is a heel. She's arguing with the fans and flipping them off, so maybe. Gorilla says Combs is undefeated as she yanks Moolah inside and sends her flailing around with a pair of slingshots. Combs slams Moolah for one and whips her around again until she ends up on the floor. Moolah forces her way back inside and starts to yank at the hair of Combs. Moolah keeps working her over with chokes and a slam for two. Combs somehow gets a full Nelson, but Moolah drops down and Combs turns into a body scissors. Mm-hmm. Moolah works free, but Combs gets a monkey flip for two. Moolah slugs Combs down as Al laughs while Moolah adjusts her tits and pulls out an object. Moolah cracks Combs with it and hides it in her mouth as Al calls her a wily old lady, which made me laugh. Moolah keeps using the object like it's 1972 as we just meander around this thing. Moolah throws Combs outside where she barrels into the timekeeper. Moolah keeps smacking Combs around on the floor as Al just keeps making old jokes. Back inside, Combs mounts a comeback, but Moolah jabs her in the throat and then clubs away some more, and this is just fucking endless. Moolah works the legs and twists into a Boston Crab, but Combs powers out and shoves Moolah outside. Combs heads out too and punches away and slams Moolah on the concrete. Combs follows with an awful atomic drop and then shoves Moolah to the post. Combs rolls inside and the bell rings as she gets the count-out win. After the bell, Moolah tries to get a Combs, but Debbie fends her off and beats her up. This sucks. The finish was even softer than like all the shit offense during the match. Way too fucking long. Everything felt like it was right out of the 1960s. Just all of it. Anytime I thought something cool may happen, it was just another lame fucking spot. Moolah sucks, and Combs is not capturing anyone's imagination. I'm surprised they had her win. I hope it doesn't mean rematch anytime soon for us. I went a fucking dud. As duddy as you can fucking get with this disaster. What'd you think, John?
Oh. Combs' hair was beyond blonde. I don't even know what color that is. That was Christina Applegate. Not so much.
Yeah.
At one point, Combs crashed onto one of the timekeepers, and she was like all over. And the timekeeper got like a good motorboat when she got up off of him. That was the highlight of his night. And Combs was gassed. I don't know where it's like they. I don't know. Maybe a syndication match here or there, but. You never really saw her, so to have her built up for a title match.
Well, she's undefeated, John.
You didn't see much of her. And she was gas. Towards the end, she was trying to lift up Moolah for an atomic drop, and she could barely lift up anything. But the highlight of the match was the old ref, Jack Lutz, who was at the beginning, he was trying to search Moolah for objects, and he was trying, and at the same time, he was trying to be careful where he could put his hands. I'm sure if Moolah was alive today, she would probably say me too.
Will Lutz.
Yeah. Will Lutz or Jack Lutz. Little Kim, bring it to me now. Yes, yeah, so I second your dud.
Moolah goes out on duds.
I third the dud. And your runtime, 8:49, which is about 7:49 too much. This match fucking sucked. It was terrible. They should just end the women's division. There's nothing left of it. Just make Moolah like the fucking, you know, gorilla position bodyguard.
Pulani in the gorilla position.
Pulani in the gorilla position. Yes. I mean, this would have been a good spot for, you know, maybe a Steamboat IC title match, but obviously nowhere to be found. Yeah, I mean, it's just all this rolling around and outside stuff. It's a big mess, and they should just end the women's division now because there's we've talked about it way back, JR. Once the whole rock and wrestling, you know, Wendi Richter, Cyndi Lauper thing ended, the division almost kind of, you know, outlived its usefulness at this point. And, of course, now we have women's tag champions, which is even funnier. To go along with this terrible women's champion.
As long as Moolah's not involved, that's fine. If she's not in the women's tag division, I'd much rather watch that.
Shmoolah! Yeah, this is terrible. I gave it a dud as well. Three duds across the board. And your match is 8:49. Three milk duds. Woo! Before we get to our next match, JR, a big shock. Who comes walking back out?
That would be Hulk Hogan. Power walks to the ring in pants and boots with his head all wrapped up, grabs a mic and talks about how he loves the fans and how much pressure has been on him since WrestleMania. He wants Harley again with no ref, no holds, no rules. Bananas in the corner. If Race beats him in that kind of match, he'll quit wrestling altogether. Yeah, John's right. I mean, this did escalate pretty quickly. Hogan's putting his fucking career on the line.
I know. Yeah, he should have done more than just the one belt shot. I agree, John. He should have really, made it, you know, vicious. And they did.
Yeah, they were scrambling here, but...
Anything.
Hey, you can't argue with business. I mean, it was a sold out house. So.
Yeah. I can't believe that. I mean, they should definitely know more. But I can't believe that this new Dream Team match. I mean, did it wreck like this whole show? I feel like the show's kind of disjointed because of it. You know, I don't know how much time that match was getting.
I think
it probably
would have sucked regardless. That's my guess.
Yeah, it probably would have.
It would have sucked as hard as Lanny Poffa.
So on his own.
On his own.
Speaking of tag teams, we have a big tag team match right now.
You know, John, you really, you know, Lanny was nice. He actually wished me a happy birthday on my face. Now I feel bad, and he got me on this tangent of just calling the poor guy out.
Well, he's proud of his talent. I mean, he said in shoot interviews, he brags about it.
Good for him. As long as he's shooting somewhere, not this. Anyway, all right, the Killer Bees taking on Demolition, a very key tag match here. The Bees trying to stay relevant. Demolition's working up the ladder. The Demos are alone tonight and have the generic hard rock riff playing them out. Gorilla wonders where Mr. Fuji is. This is such a big match and thinks a win here can net them a title match. And he mentions that because Fuji has taken over the match from Johnny V, the luscious one. Gorilla and Al put over the Demos big and say they were hesitant at first, but with Fuji, they're now unstoppable. Al says Fuji has gelled them. Gorilla talks about Fuji's team of Professor Tanaka, calling him Chopstick Charlie. Blair and Axe. Awful. Old Chopstick Charlie himself, Professor Tanaka. Blair and Axe open things up, and Al says Renzelto and the Bees have something new planned for tonight. Gorilla runs through the deep tag division ranks as Blair pummels Axe. Brunzel and Smash tag in as we reset, and Jim works the arm and gets a two count for a cross body block. Smash blocks a hip lock with a hard clothesline, but Brunzel takes him down with a single leg trip. Blair tags in, and the Bees start to quick tag and double team and work the legs, and then keep Smash grounded. Smash escapes and tags Axe, but Blair takes him down too and works the legs. Brunzel comes in and gets a one count for going to the leg, followed by the Bees again quick tagging and dominating the legs of Axe. Blair gets a figure four, but as the ref is tied up with Brunzel, Smash comes in and breaks it with a hard elbow drop. Smash tags in and starts to batter Blair with hard clubbing blows. The Demos double team where they can and punish Blair until Axe grabs a tight rear chin lock. They quick tags and double teams continue, with Blair getting a hope near fall here and there. Brunzel tries to get involved, just makes things worse. Blair takes a shit kicking in and out of the ring. A long shit-kicking as the Demos are just ruthlessly beating the piss out of him here. Blair tries for a slam, but Axe falls on top of him for two until Brunzel makes the save. Blair busts up a bear hug and wipes out Smash with a clothesline, and then finally makes the tag, but the ref was with Axe and he missed it. Axe tags in, but Blair catches him with a flying forearm and now makes the tag to a big pop. Brunzel's red hot and cleans house, leveling Smash with a dropkick, but Axe makes the save. Blair returns as everything breaks down. Brunzel rolls up Smash, but Axe comes over and clubs him and covers for the win. The ref really botched that. He turned around way too soon and saw Axe interfere. Gorilla's not happy with the illegal man getting the pin, but the end was all chaos. Rock-solid classic tag match, a good heat segment, as Demolition has beat the shit out of Blair. I thought the opening shine was too long, and I wish the end had more to it. But it was a strong tag match. I just missed a couple of things to keep it from really climbing up the star ladder. So I went 2.5 on this. Could have maybe been a bit more. If they tighten things up. But overall, it was pretty entertaining, Scott.
It was your longest match of the night, 16:09.
Yeah.
So good meaty match for the Garden. I also gave it 2.5 stars. I really enjoyed the early part of the match. Killer Bees acted almost heelish, like you're cutting the ring off. And I was fascinated by the way the Bees worked early on. I mean, I knew eventually we were going to get, you know, Axe and Smash just bludgeoning. And that's what we did get. The ending was a little wonky, but it was a big win for them. I mean, it's evident this is a team Vince likes and a team that you're going to see move up the ladder very, very quickly in the company. But I liked it. I thought the match was good. I thought the Bees worked really well. I feel like they kind of worked out of their comfort zone and actually worked semi-heel, because I think you knew eventually these guys were going to get, you know, turned face. They just had that look. Obviously, everybody calls them, you know, Road Warriors knockoffs. I never thought that. And I think you knew eventually the crowd was going to, you know, turn to them. So I feel like even the match kind of worked that way a little bit, just as a test. But the Bees worked really good almost as a heel early on. And then, of course, they did take the shit kicking. So great match. I'll get 2.5. Maybe if we do quarters, I'd have done 2.75. But it was really good. And, John, Demolition looked good here. And I'd say the Bees, I didn't think, looked too bad either.
Nah, the Bees were very impressive. But this is just shows that at this time, the tag team division was stacked. So, unfortunately, the Bees fell behind the Bulldogs and the Rougeos and the Hearts. They kind of got lost in the shuffle. But here, they put up a good show. And also, they talked about Fuji. But for some reason, Fuji wasn't with them at the ring, which was strange, because he was there earlier with Morocco and Orton, and he wasn't here for this match.
I wonder if he was actually with them yet. Or if they were like, if they were just starting to make the switch and they talk about it here just to get it over. You know what I mean? Like maybe
right,
he actually.
Because at the beginning, they were originally managed by Johnny V. So maybe this was during the transition, right?
Yeah. So maybe they would just said, all right, saying on commentary, we're going to be doing it. But they hadn't actually like aired it or anything yet.
And also Demolition, they came to their music, but this was before. It was just the music there. Right. It wasn't with the lyrics yet.
Yeah,
it was a different version, too. It was definitely a different version. It didn't even sound the same.
Right. I'm trying to look through Graham quick to see if he has when Fuji first shows up with them. I'll look.
I could have sworn that Gorilla and then maybe they didn't even mention them. Yeah, I was thinking. But you made a good point about the ref, Justin. He was hard. The big spot at the end, he was supposed to miss it. And he was staring right at it when the big double team spot at the end. He wasn't one of the regular refs. He was probably just some temporary Jamal because it wasn't one that I was seeing too much before, and he really botched that spot at the end where he wasn't supposed to see it, and it turned out Axe did it right in front of him.
Yeah, he fucked it all up. On the 5-2 Boston show, Fuji was with them, but that was taped for the 5-18 primetime, so that would have aired this night. So maybe that was the first time it was going to air on TV.
Yeah, they were holding off on the Fuji, so it wasn't officially on TV.
Yeah, because I don't. Because then he's with them on the 6-6. Superstars, that's filmed on May 12th, again on the 531 Challenge, taped the next day. Yeah, he's not with them at the house shows until those TVs air, so that must have been what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
All right, so Demolition gets the win again, your match time, 16:09. And next match, one of our personal MSG favorites.
Oh, yeah. Jose Luis Rivera
Coquera
takes on the Outlaw, Ram Bass. The Outlaw is back for the first time since January, set to battle the always frustrating Jose Luis. Bass gets in Gorilla's face, really gives him the business as he's entering the ring. Gorilla smacks his hat off and basically tells him to go fuck himself. It was quite the scene. Jose Luis is fucking jacked up big time. Must have started working out with Morocco or something. He is fucking juiced here. Bass grabs the mic and challenges Gorilla to get in the ring and fight him and calls him a baboon. Bass hits the floor and starts jawing with the crowd and stalls for way too long. We eventually get going. Bass hammers away at Jose Luis, battering him in and out of the ring. Rivera mounts a comeback and knocks Bass outside, and the Outlaw grabs a chair and throws it in the ring. Jose Luis keeps Bass at bay, and the Outlaw's back outside arguing with the fans. Gorilla says Rivera doesn't have the ability to take someone out, and Al says he could be world champion if he ever figures things out. Jose Luis works the arm, and Bass takes control just to batter him with power strikes and picking up near falls. Bass drops a hot shot and then ties him up in the ropes and pounds away as the crowd is completely just checked out, chanting boring, and they aren't wrong. The ref eventually frees Rivera after Bass beats the crap out of him. Rivera comes back with an awful dropkick that Gorilla and Al the shit all over. Bass gets tied up in the ropes, and now Jose Luis lands a few shots until he's released. Bass comes at Jose Luis with a clothesline and finishes him with the face buster. This was tedious and is way too fucking long, way too much stalling and nonsense woven in throughout. Jose Luis sucks. He has not improved at all. Gorilla even fucking says it, basically. And he also says Bass didn't improve him here tonight. Didn't impress him here tonight. Nothing doing. The crowd agreed. I went half a star just because they tried. But it was real garbage. And I don't get. Were they building to a fucking Bass-Gorilla feud or something locally? I don't know what's going on. But this card is quickly circling the fucking bowl, John.
You talked about a lot of stalling outside the ring. This was all Ron Bass for... For about three quarters of the match, that's all he did, yelling at the crowd. This is just a time killer. And Lord and Gorilla, they hammered Jose Luis throughout the match. They kept hopping on. He doesn't have the killer instinct. And this is just abuse on Jose Luis, although probably deserved because he hasn't improved much.
Not at all. He's the same schlub we saw back. You know, like in 85, we're doing these shows. We're like, all right, we'll give him kind of a... give him a break. He's figuring it out. But, I mean, he's still doing the same shit. You know, he's fucking still Bryce Petty, you know, at the end of the day. So it's like, you know, we're trying to make it work, but he's just not getting anywhere.
Yeah, still getting cucked. Cuck Chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I gave this, did I give this a dud? No, I gave it a half star. Your match time, 9:37. Oh, my God. 9:15 of it was fucking walking around yelling at Gorilla.
Yelling at the crowd.
Yeah, it was just bad.
You baboon.
You baboon. What do you always get mad at me for? Gorilla's such a – he was very douchey on this night. He knocks Ron Bass's hat off. Ron Bass gets pissed. And the gorilla goes, I don't know what he's mad at me about. I'm retired. Even though you fucking start a fight with him, for Christ's sakes. I forgot Jose Luis was still with the company. This is the first time we've seen him, what, like a year? I can't remember the last time he was on, but
We're running three times tonight, Jose. You're on tonight.
Yeah,
we finally got the call. The phone finally rang.
Here, Barcelona, Morocco's medicine. Yeah. Oh my God, you're right though, JR. He was all like fucking misshapen. Yeah, this match is garbage. I don't know what Ron Bass's whole gig was here, but and Ron Bass, did Gorilla get this right? Gorilla mentions he had a branding iron. I thought he had the bullwhip. I don't know where the – did he carry a branding iron around? I don't remember that. I know he had the bullwhip. I don't remember Ron Bass having a branding iron, though. Did he? I don't know. Anyway, Gorilla mentions a branding iron, but I don't remember him having
I don't know. He's got the spurs, the bullwhip. He's got every fucking thing you could possibly
have. He's every cowboy cliche. But anyway, Ron Bass gets the win. Yeah, Betsy. Yeah, he doesn't mention Betsy. He mentions some brand new guy, which I don't remember him having. Anyway, Ron Bass gets the win in a completely abysmal match. Your match time is 9:37. All right, JR, before our main event, the Fink – well, I'm sure you don't want to mention the matches now, but Fink mentions a few matches for the next house show, which we'll have. It is June 14th. And for the first time ever, John, I don't know if you knew this or not, but till he said
it. Yeah, a Sunday spectacular.
Spectacular on a Sunday night at the Garden. You don't see that very often, if ever. So that's coming up. And, of course, we'll get all into that show next week. So, but now, JR, time for the last match.
Yes, the last match. Between old Kenny Patera and the Honky Tonk Man. This is Ken Patera's first match in MSG in over 2 years. Did we talk about Patera? Was it Saturday's main event? There's something we covered his return and all that shit.
Yeah, because he was in the Battle Royal.
Yep. That's right.
Yep. And of course, just to clarify, I know we probably might have mentioned earlier the Battle Royal on Saturday's main event.
Oh, before three, was he in that one?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, John? Was he in the Battle Royal?
No, I don't think so.
Nah.
He had just come back. But the last Saturday's main event.
Have we talked about him?
Well, didn't we? Wasn't it the last Saturday's main event like that day that? They had the debate. I don't remember if we talked
about it. Oh, that's right, the May one. I'm sorry. I'm thinking the March one. Sorry, the May one. Yeah, they do talk about it.
I don't know if we
was he on, though?
No,
he was on
there.
No, they showed the clip,
about
though.
Because Bobby was in the brace, though.
And they showed it. So did we talk about it, John? Do you remember?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, all right, good enough.
Yeah, I think we did.
All right. So he's subbing for Jake the Snake here against the Honky Tonk Man. Jake's injury, of course, still due to the guitar and his messed up neck. And Patera had recently returned, steps in. Honky's become a heat machine thanks to that Jake feud, suddenly feeling like a guy on the cusp of being a real heel player. Al tries to figure out what kind of music Honky's playing, and Gorilla says he's just a poor Elvis impersonator. And as you know, Elvis is a great human being. Honky and Jimmy are surprised as Patera is introduced to a decent reception for the crowd. Honky bails outside to readjust his game plan because he's just surprised now that it is Patera and not Jake. We get a bunch of stalling. Patera finally catches Honky and slams him twice by chucking him across the ring in a couple cool spots. Honky bails to regroup, and when he returns, Ken cranks away at the arm. Ken messes up Honky's hair, and he ends up bailing and starting to walk away before Hart convinces him to stick around. Honky slides in, and Ken's all over him again, clubbing away, but Honky dodges a charge, and Ken slams him hard to the post. Honky goes right to work on the shoulder and arm and controls for a bit until missing an axe blow. Ken comes back with a flurry and a monkey flip and then drops Honky with a clothesline. Ken follows with a backbreaker for two and slams Honky for another near fall. Ken takes a shot at Jimmy and then catches Honky in a bear hug. Jimmy ties up the ref as Honky's screaming in pain, but Jimmy comes in and cracks Ken with the megaphone, but it's too late as the referee heard Honky quit. Ken batters both men and locks him in a double bear hug as the crowd's just going fucking ballistic here. The match was better than it should have been, really. It's a big win for Ken, too, knocking off a red-hot Honky Tonk Man. Patera looks very spry, but he feels dated, and the crowd's not too hot on him till the end, but he's moving around pretty well. Fine enough main event to cap off a shit night of action. I went 2 stars. But Scott, I thought, like, if they had refreshed his look a little bit, and, you know, we talked about him maybe being a heel last time, even the face thing is okay. He's moving around well right now. Like, I just feel like he was a few tweaks away from maybe he could have worked out, you know? Maybe he could have done something. But I still think his lack of promo ability was going to shoot him in the foot in this role as a face.
Which I think is really strange, and it's one of the things I want to talk about. Your match time, 9:56. So we had a lot of nice long, meaty matches here. Same with this one.
A lot of long, meaty things tonight.
Long, meaty things, yes. Downers Grove, self-inflicted. The funny thing about – it's funny you mentioned promos, JR, because when Kenny was a heel, and if you watch some of his earlier stuff – and I'm curious to ask Kelly this because I'm sure they talk – obviously they talked about him heavily on Titans. I thought he was a pretty good promo guy as a heel. I don't know if it changed, if he, you know, sitting in prison did anything to him or whatever.
You know, off the steel plate.
Yeah, yes. You know, maybe he got shivved. Who knows? But I thought he was a good promo guy as a heel. I don't know why he suddenly turned to shit as a babyface. Maybe he just didn't know how to react to the crowd or how to put something over that's not heel. I don't know. But it was very perplexing that he sounded so awful as a babyface when he wasn't half bad, you know, in Bobby's stable in 84 and 85. So I don't know. Very odd. The match was fine. And I mean, right now he doesn't look too bad in the ring. I guess the legs don't look as creamy, but and I said the hair doesn't look as bad, but I don't know. Something just didn't seem right. He seemed out of place, but
yeah.
The ending is kind of fucked up because they say it's a submission, but then they actually say it's a DQ. So I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah.
I don't know what the actual ending is. They thought it was a DQ.
The DQ makes more sense. It would be more in line with what they got going on. Like, I was shocked that they pinned him. You know, like, that surprised me. Or that they submitted him. I mean, so maybe it was a DQ. I don't know. The whole thing is very confusing.
Yeah, Gorilla made it a point, though, to say, oh, he gave up before he got DQ'd. So they gave
him.
Yeah, no, it was very strange. Yeah. Very strange. So I'm not sure what the hell they were doing. But anyway, Ken Patera gets the win either way. Are you surprised that John, are you surprised Honky didn't win here? I was kind of surprised. I thought Honky would definitely win here. So
if you would say what 6 months to a year and now where these two guys would be, I mean, at this point, Patera came out and it was like the second biggest pop of the night behind Hogan. He really
when you look at what else they've had to cheer for.
Yeah, not much, I guess. But still, and also, Gorilla, I guess behind the scenes, Gorilla really, they were close because Gorilla always spoke well about Patera and always gave him a little extra boost.
Yeah.
He always said, he always called him Kenny, and he said, Kenny put me out of wrestling, one of his last matches. So Gorilla helped there. And Patera probably should have just retired after this because he would have went out on top because he looked good. He had a big crowd pop. But from here, Honky Tonk goes one way and Patera goes way down. So this was his high watermark for here. And also, it's a shame what either was going on with Jake, whether either the injury is or it was more like Gorilla said it about three times. Jake injured his subscapularis. But I think at this time there was a lot of between Jake and his injuries and suspensions. There was more cocaineus up his proboscis than the subscapularis. Gorilla kept repeating that about 10 times. So. But otherwise, this was surprising.
Yeah,
I mean, you got the usual Honky stalling. You got the usual, but this is one of Patera's best matches.
Yeah, I definitely thought Honky would maybe steal it with like Jimmy holding Ken's leg down or something. You know, maybe something like that, like our Honky holding the rope. So that's what it felt like coming to me. So it was good on them, I guess, to let Patera get the win. we actually get a little coda here at the end of the show. Gorilla talks to Honky and Jimmy, who bitch about being hosed with the substitution. Gorilla said he had plenty of chances to win but blew them. Honky blames Jack Tunney for messing with them, and Jimmy vows revenge. So
big
there you
fat, go. That big fat Jack Tunney.
Yes.
I love how he says that. The best was didn't go his way. He goes, let me find that fat Tunney.
Yeah, that was very good. And so there you go. There's our show, which means I'm not looking forward to what we pick here for
time
certain categories, but
for the awards.
For the awards.
All right, that's our match of the night. To me, layup choice tonight. That's Hogan versus Race.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's really nothing else to pick, to be honest with you.
Jesus.
All right, lots of competition for the Cousin Jr. tonight for the worst match. But I went, and I was back and forth. I had the Barbie Man in there for a bit, but I went with Moolah versus Combs. That was never fucking ending, and it was terrible, everything about it. And I hate Moolah.
I agree. I don't want to do anything to the great Dave Barbie. I don't want to insult King of Prussia. But yeah, the women's match was trash.
Yeah, I was thinking of going Outlaw, Bass,
but that was bad too.
But Outlaw gets a. Gets credit for calling Gorilla baboons.
Gorilla baboon.
So yeah, it's gotta be
Moolah. Picks up his wife.
All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP. I went with Hogan. I mean, he's just no one else is close on this side. Patera maybe can give a little nod to, but yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I like Patera with that double bear hug spot.
Yeah. What's your choice officially? Patera?
Patera, yeah. His one moment of glory.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. For the Uncle Elmer, another stiff competition. And here's where I honor the legendary Dave Barbie. I thought overall he was the worst actual worker on the show. And that's a show with fucking Jose Luis. That's a show with Moolah. That's a show with Combs. But Combs. I thought Barbie, I thought Barbie was the worst. He looked fucking terrible in there.
Ray Combs?
Yes. Ray Combs now would have had a better match with fucking Moolah.
Oh, that's...
Jesus.
What do you guys think?
Dave. Yeah, poor Dave Barbie. Great hair.
I'm a Barbie girl. Yeah.
You with that one, D'Amato?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Best moment of the night. I was kind of torn. I was thinking maybe Harley's post-match, but you know what? This I'm going to give to Patera here. I thought the double bear hug.
Yeah, the double bear hug. Yeah. Yep.
That was the biggest pop of the night. All right, so Patera's double bear hug. All right, so there you go. I'm sorry, we got one more. We have another one, a lot of competition tonight. The Arcidi Award for the most juiced up of the evening. Again, you had some really good choices, but I thought it was the mentor-mentee. I went with a tie between Morocco and Jose Luis. I feel like he's working with him on this one. I went with a tie on this one.
I was going to say Jose Luis solo, but definitely Morocco starting to get up there again.
Morocco.
So I'll go with the tie, sure.
Morocco over Barbie.
Yeah, Barbie was looking pretty beef, too.
And Davis with his muscle blouse.
All right, so the last time you were on, D'Amato, here were the grades. 10, 9.5, 9.5. That was WrestleMania 3. I'm guessing we're not going to be in the vicinity. Tonight, I went with a 2.5 out of 10, and I feel like that's even generous. There was a lot of garbage on this show. I'll give it for Hogan and Race, the Bees and Demos, even the Powers match. That tag was okay. And the Patera stuff at the end was pretty solid. But the rest was just pure dog shit across the board. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I'm going. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
3.5. I got 3.5.
I think 2.5 is the lowest. Scott, you went 2.5 back in January. Actually, you and Pete went 2 in December. I went 2.5 on that one. I went 2.5 in June. Scott, you went 2 June of 86.
Yeah, I don't think the show's that low. It's pretty low, though.
I think it's one of the worst we've watched easily. It's tied with the worst stuff we've seen.
I mean, the two tags I liked. But not good enough to. I'm going to give it a 3.5. I agree with you, John. I'll give it a 3.5.
All right.
And you know what killed it was a Brain leaving. The commentary also was off.
Gorilla was more tonight. Yeah, I didn't mind Al though. I thought Al was pretty good. Gorilla was off tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, but Brain bailed out after the first few matches, so he was good the first few. But
Al was laughing at Gorilla too about the. About the fucking body parts and stuff. I mean, when he's laughing on camera, you know that's just not good. It's just not good.
The subscapularis. He said about 6 times. Yeah.
Yeah. So 3.5 for me.
All right. There you go. That wraps up that shit show. So coming up here, of course, like I mentioned, Jeff Learns Wrestling, new episode drop looking at Survivor Series 87. We also did the newest four-year consideration, our final podcast previewing the greatest WWE wrestler ever project here at PlaceMediation.com. It was myself, it was good old Will, it was Aaron, and Steve Williams went through the main eventers. It's a really fun listen if you haven't submitted your ballot, or even if you have, check it out. And of course, ballots do close. We're getting very close, about 10 days or so away on, is it 10? Maybe like 12 days. It was New Year's Eve, December 31st at midnight, ballots close. So We have a nice chunk of ballot so far, but we'd love to see more, so be sure to get those in. We have plenty of content out there if you're looking to cram. The nomination list is out there on a Google Doc. Everything's on the Facebook group. Just reach out if you're not part of the conversation yet. And, of course, we'll be having plenty of material to come after the first of the year as well, breaking down, revealing the list, doing podcasts and whatnot to show off our lists and stuff like that. So lots going on. Be sure to take part in that. And we're already starting to preview and ramp up our WrestleMania season project as well, guys. So lots going on there. Scott, what do you got going on the podcast front?
We're off this week, but next week, actually, definitely check out this past week's episode of Main Event. We previewed last night's Clash of Champions, and we did our first New Japan match pick analysis. Next week, Christmas week, we'll be back, and we're actually going to debut our other new segment. We're going to go all the way back and recap and talk about every single TNA pay-per-view. So we're going to go back to the very first one, June 19th, 2002, the first weeklies. And myself, Nate, Steve Willie will join us, Aaron George. It'll be a good time. So that'll be next week during Christmas week. So check it out.
All right. And, of course, stay tuned this weekend. It is time, guys, for the Christmas Spectacular. What number is this one, Scott? Seven?
Six? Seven?
I think it's seven. Right?
11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, seventh.
Yeah. Seventh annual Christmas Spectacular. Yep. That'll be another wonderful trip through time and space. So with all the
some
staff,
dimension.
All the frivolous frivolities, of course. Kevin Kelly will be part of that, as always, too. So check that out. Always a lot of fun. We'll be back next Tuesday. Since Monday's Christmas, we're planning on being here Tuesday night with Kelly, looking at the June 87, hopefully better than the shit show. And then we'll go on from there. So the beat does roll on, Scott. We're almost through another year as we wrap up another episode. So, Johnny, thanks for joining us, as always. Scott, I'll talk to you soon. Everyone, take care.
Guys.
Have a great Christmas. Be sure to check out the Christmas
Merry
special
Christmas.
This weekend. We'll talk to you next week, hopefully with much less self-blowjobs and dog shits and frisbees and
Mula.
Ray Combs.
And Barbie girls.
Yes, no more awkward. Stockings and bows.